Information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
And it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember the time you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order. Welcome, my friends, to episode 76 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James. I'm your host and webmaster. It's May 23rd, 2008, coming to you, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network. Tons of horrifying news to go over yet again this week. Desensitizing drills and propaganda pandemics, leaky levees, 9/11 updates, Obama, Clinton, McCain, and the nightmare ticket, ATF, CPS, and ICE raids, red team, suicide pilots, Carlisle, Maine Corps, Crime Stoppers, Pentaganda, and the Playboy Tasers. It's all here on episode 76. It's May 23rd, 2008, MediaMonarchy.com. Police truck, that was the Dead Kennedys, and that kind of reminds me of the glory of free speech internet radio, because I sure as fuck wouldn't be able to play that back east on the FM station. But here I am out west in the People's Republic of Oregon doing a show called Media Monarchy. All the news and views and politics and conspiracies and cover-ups and audio and video that you hear on the show is available on MediaMonarchy.com. This is episode 76, coming to you May 23rd, 2008. As always, live every Friday morning at 10 Pacific Time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and Sunday nights at 7 Eastern Time, revereradionetwork.com, the worldwide home of free speech. And you can always hit me up on MySpace, Dig, YouTube, and Yahoo with Media Monarchy as your keyword, and get the podcasts thanks to iTunes and archive.org and radioforall.net. Too much, my friends, too much to go over. I think I mentioned last week when I had Alex Ansari in studio, which, by the way, thank you guys for all the downloads of the episode. Keep passing it around. And I'll once again, thank Alex for coming in. But I'm still working out some Mac transitions. I'm a lot slower with the blogging on the Mac. But I'll work it all out. And hopefully I'll be bringing you more episodes and more video. I'd like to do some webcasts. Of course, the Mac has the handy-dandy little spy cam right there. So, there's a lot to go over. And, like I've said before, there's so much, I don't really do it justice. So again, use the website. It's all there. So let's dive into desensitizing drills and propaganda pandemics. Of course, a lot of these brought to you by my man Greg Nixon at dailydoseofterror.blogspot.com. And before we dive into this, just to mention, just in case maybe you're new to all this, why do we look at terror drills? Well, they're hugely expensive and possibly a waste of money. That's the simple one. But they desensitize the public to think that Al-Qaeda really is under your bed, that they really would want to launch an anthrax attack at some whitey Midwestern college. And foremost is in the event of 9/11 and 7/7 and others, they're running drills at the exact same times in the exact same places that these massive attacks occur. On 9/11, they were running hijacking drills. On 7/7, they were running suicide bomber drills. And there's even, if you want to dig down into that, Operation Nine Lives was the presidential succession drill that was going on right as Ronald Reagan was taking office. If you'll recall, he was shot. And they were just happened to be running a presidential succession drill, of course, with Poppy Bush waiting in the wings. So, let's get into some of the current terror drills. And we've got a lot. And we're just going to hit a few. So, first we got a New York practice drill that was last weekend that caused a little bit of slight worry.
Back here at home, a practice drill at Sangerton Square Mall this weekend had a lot of people worried that it was the real thing. It was a multi-agency response drill. Teams from New Hartford, Utica, and Willowvale participated. Sunday, the practice scene was an active shooter and a chlorine bomb simulation. Teams practiced both response and decontamination. The police department intends on conducting more multi-agency exercises like this in the future.
I'm sure they do. And that's from WKTV. So next we jump to pantograph.com. National Guard performs hazmat exercise at the Illinois Coliseum. 22 members of the Bartonville-based Illinois National Guard 5th Civil Support Team were being evaluated during a formal training exercise simulating a hazardous event at the Coliseum. Guardsmen were clad in hazardous material suits and an array of emergency trucks and trailers filled a lot northwest of the building. In the scenario, a, quote, dissident group attacked people attending a volleyball match the night before, said Lieutenant Colonel Larry Ritter from the U.S. Army North at Fort Sam Houston, Texas. Now, we also had some war game drills, some live fighter drills going on over the D.C., Virginia area. Falcon Virgo, which of course sounds suspiciously like Amalgam Virgo, one of the numerous drills going on 9/11. Falcon Virgo training flights over D.C., this from NBC4.com. Residents in the D.C. area can expect military flights Wednesday night into Thursday morning. That was just 2 days ago. An exercise scheduled to begin at 11:45 p.m. and end at 6 a.m. comprises a series of training flights coordinated with the Federal Aviation Administration, the National Capital Region Command Center, the Joint Air Defense Operations Center, the Civil Air Patrol, and NORAD. If we jump to KDKA, there was also a disaster drill held in downtown Pittsburgh.
This morning it might look like a disaster area in downtown Pittsburgh in a few hours. Don't worry, there is no emergency. It's a drill to practice what to do in case a terrorist attack should happen here. KDKA's Bob Allen live on the North Shore with details of the story. Bob, good morning.
Good morning, Sunny. This is an opportunity for various agencies from all levels of government to sharpen their response to the threat of a terrorist attack. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, is conducting a joint operation with state and local agencies to test preparedness and continuity of operations plans. Now, the operation includes 300 participants from various agencies involved in an exercise called Bridges Out. A mock terrorist attack on Pittsburgh will require government agencies to activate their co-op plans. Well, the purpose is to allow participants to test agency shelter in place and co-op plans and capabilities. Now, the exercise is scheduled to begin around 10 o'clock this morning at a downtown location. Reporting live from the North Shore, Bob Allen, KDKA TV Morning News.
Well, Bob Allen, you did a very good job reading that press release. Thank you. Again, that's KDKA. Now, if we jump to the North County Journal. Firefighters plan emergency drill at Jamestown Mall. Residents living near Jamestown Mall. I'm not sure where we are. I'm sorry. The state. You have to click the link. Residents living near Jamestown Mall are advised that the Blackjack Fire Protection District, oh, it's St. Louis, there you go, will host a massive emergency drill. Seven different North County fire districts and departments will gather at the south end of the mall using the vacant Dillard store for the drill. Organizers want the residents not to be alarmed by the number of emergency vehicles in the area. And the scenario involves about 15 to 20 victims. Now, if we jump to CBS5.com, flu pandemic disaster drill held in Sonoma County.
I was really nervous at first because we really didn't know what to expect.
A mock drill on what to do in an emergency pandemic situation. A learning experience for volunteers, vital for workers.
Well, it's really for the agencies to understand how to dispense medications in the event of an exposure to a pathogen.
Today, that pathogen was ingested anthrax, infecting those who ate contaminated food. A fearful thought, a scary process.
And everyone was really nice and explained the process, and they were very informative about anthrax and like the signs and symptoms that you would look for.
After a medical evaluation and filling out some personal information, the next step is an education seminar where you find out exactly about the pandemic that's going on. After you're educated, you then go on to a medical screening. They'll meet with you and find out if you have any medical problems. This is only the beginning.
They looked through our medical history, and then we got to get information about the medication.
Dr. Hornberger says for a first drill, she's happy with the turnout.
That's the intention of the drill, is to learn where we can make this process flow more smoothly, but all in all, I'm very happy.
Rick?
No, thank you.
Like, that was the clip about anthrax and stuff. I jumped ahead. That was actually from WIBW. That was the pandemic drill at Washburn University, where I mentioned, of course, that Al-Qaeda is just itching to hit anthrax to a whitey college. But what I mentioned before I played that clip was the flu pandemic disaster drill in Sonoma County. That's from CBS 5. And that is called Code Pandora. That's their hypothetical avian flu pandemic scenario. And if we jump down to SouthCoastToday.com, disaster drill planned in New Bedford. The mayor's office and the Bristol County Sheriff's Department will again sponsor the exercise dubbed New Bedford Response. And it's emergency responders and foodborne disease outbreak scenario. So there's just a little bit. There's your Daily Dose of Terror. Again, thanks to dailydoseofterror.blogspot.com. So keep an eye out on the drills as always. Now, something else to keep an eye out on are the leaky levees down in New Orleans. This from the AP. Despite more than $22 million in repairs, a levee that broke with catastrophic effect during Hurricane Katrina is leaking again because of the mushy ground on which New Orleans was built, raising serious questions about the reliability of the city's flood defenses. So the AP is there on the scene, and they found that the type of seepage spotted at the 17th Street Canal in the Lakeview neighborhood afflicts other New Orleans levees too, and could cause some of them to collapse during a storm.
This is an inverted T-wall on pilings, and they're sheet pile that go down to between about minus 55 and minus 65 feet. The water can't come through that sheet pile except a little bit of minor seepage at the joints. But you can't get a breach through that sheet pile with this design. Again, you can get a little seepage through the joints, and sheet pile isn't hermetically sealed, but you're not going to get a breach. This is a design of T-wall that is very secure. We didn't have a single wall of this design fail in Katrina. So we're very confident that the wall is good. You can get a little bit of seepage through the joints. The ground here has been very disturbed. There's a lot of stuff in the ground, old sandbags and rock and stuff like that. So we're getting a little bit of seepage through it, but it's of no concern. It's not a danger to anybody.
It's not a danger to anybody. Famous last words. And on that note, I'll just leave you with a little related topic. And that's that. The National Oceanographic Association predicts an active 2008 hurricane season. Moving forward, but again to South Coast today, and so it's out of Massachusetts. High schoolers arrested for reading 1984 over the intercom. Two students were arrested and another 15 to 20 staged a sit-in at Old Rochester Regional High School Wednesday, so 2 days ago, in a protest that began after students briefly commandeered the intercom system during MCAS testing. You know, that testing for your permanent record. Thomas Buckley and Zachary Sherman were charged with disorderly conduct, disturbing the peace, and disturbing the school, according to police reports. According to ORR High School Principal Sheila Haskins, one of the students read a passage from something they were apparently studying in an English or history class. Exactly what they read wasn't clear, but Ms. Haskins said it might have been excerpts from a Fidel Castro speech. That was reflected in their police reports. However, some students said it was a passage from George Orwell's novel, 1984. Moving forward to a whole swath of 9/11 updates. Of course, day by day by day, the official conspiracy theory crumbles all around and falls into its own footprint neatly. So I'm just going to hit you up with some of the headlines, and you can follow these. They're up under 9/11 updates, tribunals, torture, toxic dust, and Fahrenheit. So we've got UK government loses case against supposed 9/11 pilot trainer. That's from The Guardian. We've also got demolition resuming at a New York skyscraper damaged by 9/11 and a deadly fire. That's from Wikinews. The government has made it impossible to defend them. And that's a quote related to the tribunals coming up for the supposed 9/11 patsies. You know, of course, the ones that didn't supposedly die on the jets. So, from the International Herald Tribune, we've also got military judge denies motions to delay arraignment of 9/11 suspects. U.S. military officers challenge official account of 9/11. That's from daily.pk out of Pakistan. We've got case against 9/11 mastermind in jeopardy. That's from the AP. We also know that the military used harsh methods on the old 9/11 terror suspects. We know that one of them also tried to kill themselves after the torture. That's from McClatchy. We also know that 5 of the 6 of these guys are going to be tried. However, charges were dropped against the supposed 20th hijacker. Now, I thought the supposed 20th hijacker was Zacharias Moussaoui, but apparently it's someone else now, and that's from Wikinews. And you can also hit it up again from the AP in multiple places, like The Guardian and thinkprogress.org, and on and on and on. We've also got news that Michael Moore is moving forward with a sequel to Fahrenheit 9/11. You can read about that from 411mania.com, Infowars.com, 911blogger.com, and more places. But basically, I would imagine, given all that we know now about the lies of 9/11, Fahrenheit 9/11 was just the, of course, just the little teeny tiny tip of the iceberg. Given all we know now, thanks in no small part to all the independent 9/11 research and activist people out there, Michael Moore can either make... he has to address 9/11 truth. That's basically what I'm trying to say. He can't do a sort of middle of the road like he did the first time. He's either going to have to address 9/11 truth big time or whitewash it. So we'll see. There's also a new documentary out called Zero. And so there's a link up there and you can watch the trailer. I don't believe we mentioned previously that some old tapes and transcripts of things of Donald Rumsfeld have surfaced. And he was basically talking about the 2006 election. Now, as a sidebar, you know, the 2006 election, the one where your saviors, the Democrats, were going to impeach and end the war. Yeah, that one. And you're going to vote those phony bastards in again this fall, but we'll get to that in a minute. So, in speaking of the loss of the GOP in the 2006 election, Rumsfeld basically says maybe the correction for that is an attack. So, we've got op-ed news and other places asking the question and getting into Rumsfeld's mind of him basically saying, well, if 9/11 worked, why not try it again? We've also got one from BuzzFlash called Conspiratorially Speaking, United Flight 93 and 9/11. We've got new videos and interviews with David Ray Griffin about his new book, 9/11 Contradictions. There is something amazing up that, of course, I got from 911blogger.com. Someone put together a massive video montage where you can basically watch ABC, NBC, CBS, BBC, and Fox 9/11 coverage simultaneously in all their separate little boxes. So you can watch them simultaneously, live, original, unedited, and even the commercials are intact. It's a little tough to load, and at first I just wanted to download the thing, and you can get a torrent from conspiracycentral.net. However, it is 42 gigs. So I balked at that and haven't downloaded it, but it is amazing to check out. We've got the Flight 93 memorial preparing to move. We've got Flight 93 families wanting the memorial controversy to end. We've also got the state saying hundreds of 9/11 rescue workers are now dead anyway, and they admit that there's probably an undercount. Richard Dolan analyzes Orwellian America, 9/11, and the road to Iran. That's from PR.com. And finally, a video, a forensic analysis of 9/11 questioning the official story. And so that's just a smattering of all the 9/11 news that you can hit up on MediaMonarchy.com. So moving forward now, just a quick comic posted up that I got from Rogue Government, and I believe it came from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, but it's called America 2018, and it basically shows a family cooking outside of a van. It says America 2018, and the dad says, yes, kids, 10 years ago we were freaked out if a politician didn't wear a flag lapel pin and fearful of swarthy strangers boarding airplanes. And mom said, nobody was worrying about the country's $48 trillion debt. And the kid said, was that back when people lived in houses? Poking fun at, of course, our collapsing economy and the soon-to-be third worldization of America. Getting into a little bit of the 2008 presidential selection news. There's too much to even go into all the little bullshit minutia of things. So again, just trying to throw out some satire from the folks at The Onion. Obama, Clinton, and McCain join forces to form Nightmare Ticket. Presidential hopefuls John McCain, Barack Obama, and Hillary Clinton announced Monday their plans to form what many Beltway observers have already dubbed the 2008 nightmare ticket, a calculated move that political analysts say offers voters the worst of both worlds. After nearly a year of verbal attacks and negative campaign ads, the nominees announced that for the good of the country, they were willing to push their differences to the forefront and grant the American people the ticket they've been dreading all along. No other ticket is capable of rallying this nation around a clearer, more unified message of chaos and hopelessness, the candidate said in unison from three separate podiums, each adorned with its own American flag arrangement and personal message. Now, the Onion also has a helpful little graph. How does the Clinton-Obama-McCain nightmare ticket make you feel? 9% say proud to have the choice to immigrate, which, of course, that choice is rapidly closing. 15% say, I feel like this nation will finally be able to unite for a second civil war. Which, as a sidebar, just out this morning, I haven't even posted it up to the site yet, as now, of course, all the three candidates are scrambling around and they're doing this vice presidential search, which, of course, I've said before, and now neocon Bill Kristol is out saying it, that, surprise, surprise, McCain might pick Lieberman as his running mate. But the meme was floated this morning that, as supposedly Hillary Clinton threatens the Obama campaign that you better give me the VP spot if it doesn't work out for me, and that if it doesn't happen, they threaten all-out civil war. So you have the civil war meme being thrown out, and as I've discussed before, with the conventions coming up, they want to see riots, they want to see recreate 68, they want to see chaos. So, back to the Onion's graph about the Obama-Clinton-McCain nightmare ticket. 36% say they feel like someone were dragging their fingernails across a chalkboard, but the chalkboard is inside your body, and so is that person. 24% say they feel like a future of deadlock, death, and destruction has never looked so promising. And finally, 16% say they feel like it's a little better than when Gore announced Lieberman as his running mate. So there you go. Skipping ahead and getting to more serious news, this yesterday, court overrules Texas polygamous sect raid. Now, of course, a couple weeks ago I mentioned that this was possibly based on phony tips and false pretenses, and that a possible raid like this and CPSing a bunch of kids is possibly far more psychologically damaging than growing up in a wacky religious sect. So from the BBC, an appeal court has ruled that U.S. officials had no right to seize 463 children from a polygamous sect in western Texas last month. The court said that the reasons given for the children's removal were, quote, legally and factually insufficient, but it did not immediately order the return of the children to the ranch. In April, officials raided a compound of the sect, saying young girls are being forced into marriage and sex. The children were placed into foster care, where, of course, statistically, they're far more likely to be abused. But the Texas Third Appeal Court ruled that officials failed to demonstrate the children were in any immediate danger, which is the only legal, allowable reason for taking children from their homes without court proceedings. And much like other cases that they like to blow up into a big psyop spectacle, like when they could have picked up David Koresh in Waco months before they turned it into a massacre, they knew that this was going on, but they let it escalate. Shifting gears again, if we jump to globalresearch.ca, red team penetrates Lawrence Livermore's superblock. Now, if you're a listener to the show, you know I've mentioned red teams a lot, and I've mentioned the Lawrence Livermore laboratory a lot. Red team is the war game terminology for the bad guys. And so we speculate that red teams are used in many false flag war game operations. Whether or not the red team knows they're the red team, who knows? But to the story about Lawrence Livermore and the red team penetrating their super block, which isn't nearly as good as it sounds. During a mock exercise at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, LLNL, an anti-terrorist red team breached security and penetrated Building 332, the so-called superblock, where some 2,000 pounds of plutonium and weapons-grade uranium are stored. Lab security personnel failed miserably, Time magazine reported, and that link is there for you. Situated in Livermore, California, the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory is about an hour's drive from San Francisco. About 7 million people live within a 50-mile radius of the weapons facility. But as the Project on Government Oversight, POGO, disclosed in March, the National Nuclear Security Administration, NNSA, has given Livermore Lab a waiver so that it doesn't have to meet current security requirements devised by the intelligence community. The encroaching residential community surrounding the lab has made it impossible to properly protect the lab's weapons quantities of plutonium and highly enriched uranium. And also going on in the news still, even though we mentioned it a few weeks ago, is this debate and controversy about the disturbingly corrupt Plum Island Laboratory. And so a few weeks ago, we went over how they want to move this deadly foot and mouth disease laboratory off of a little island in Plum Island, off the coast of around New York, New England. They want to move it to the shore. And I mentioned a book called Lab 257. I actually picked that up from Amazon, and it's about Plum Island and their work and their chaos. And it only took just a little bit of flipping through to basically show the documents that Lyme disease was created by Plum Island. And it was named after, was it the Lyme Islands just off of Connecticut? Double check me on that. But it's just another case of a corrupt lab doing highly toxic work that, of course, just sometimes happens to get released. And so you can look at Porton Down, and you can look at all the foot and mouth diseases, and you can look at, of course, Fort Detrick and the anthrax attacks, which, of course, immediately just points back to Philip Zack. Shifting gears wildly, jumping up to Canada, this coming from the Montreal Gazette. Canadian punk band The Suicide Pilots were investigated by the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Their music is abrasive, their lyrics sharply critical of Prime Minister Stephen Harper, and their logo features a cartoon airplane about to fly into the Peace Tower, which I have their logo up and links to their MySpace page. But does the punk rock band Suicide Pilots constitute a threat to national security? That was the question Wednesday after one of the band's members made public documents obtained through the Privacy Act revealing that the Suicide Pilots had been the target of an RCMP and an integrated national security enforcement team investigation. Yavir Hamid, lawyer for drummer Jeffrey Monahan of the Suicide Pilots, said the decision to investigate a group of musicians raises serious questions about artistic expression in Canada.
We're gonna fall. Ask you what provocation I had. Strong antipathy of good to bad. When truth of virtue, the front is yours. The affront is my friend, it should be yours. Each proclamation serves to settle into a manufacture of people's consent. Led by their virtual chair, tell them what you have in the name of the good. Strange, strange love. No one's got anything. Of religious demands, shoot by the stakes have gotten so high. One quick finger, we're all gonna fry. It's the end that's been long foreseen. History ends the American dream. This isn't new, it's been here before. And the only thing new is the nuclear war.
That was the Suicide Pilots with their song The Fall. Canadian punk band recently investigated for unlawful use of free speech. And so that tracks up on MediaMonarchy.com with the link over to their MySpace page, MySpace.com/suicidepilots. Moving forward into the dirty world of the CIA, former CIA official indicted anew in bribery case. This from the AP. A new indictment of a former top CIA official alleges that he received bribes in the form of, quote, sexual companionship, in exchange for helping a friend get an edge in landing multi-million dollar contracts from the CIA. Federal prosecutors in Alexandria, Virginia, on Tuesday obtained a superseding indictment against Kyle Dusty Foggo, F-O-G-G-O, who, as executive director, held the CIA's number three rank before leaving in 2006. The indictment accuses Foggo of accepting tens of thousands of dollars in meals, vacations, and other perks in exchange for helping friend Brent Wilkes obtain various contracts with the CIA. The new indictment also includes an allegation that Foggo received sexual companionship and, quote, enrichment of a mistress. Though the allegations are not detailed in the indictment, the sexual companionship allegation may be new to the formal charges against Foggo, but they are a familiar part of the case as a whole. Wilkes has already pleaded guilty to paying bribes to then-Representative Randy Duke Cunningham of California, some of which came in the form of hookers. Moving to ABC News, U.S. soldiers did the dirty work for Chinese interrogators. U.S. military personnel at Guantanamo Bay allegedly softened up detainees at the request of Chinese intelligence officials who had come to the island facility to interrogate the men, or they allowed the Chinese to dole out the treatment themselves, according to claims in a new government report. Buried in this Department of Justice report that was released Tuesday, there are new allegations about a 2002 arrangement between the United States and China, which allowed Chinese intelligence to visit Guantanamo and interrogate Chinese Uyghurs held there. Now, a couple weeks ago, Uyghur was a new one to me. It's U-I-G-H-U-R. And it was in reference to a woman named Rabia Kadir that was basically saying that some of the latest terror in China is, of course, phony false flag terror, the favorite tool of corrupt governments. But speaking of China, if we jump to Danger Room, a professor accused of passing drone technology to China. See, it's not just the Israelis spying and passing information. A retired university professor is accused of passing information to China about high-tech work on drones. J. Reese Roth, that's R-E-E-C-E Roth, a 70-year-old professor who used to work at the University of Tennessee's Plasma Sciences Lab, got caught up in the complex web of regulations that surrounds non-classified data subject to export controls. On Monday, he was formally indicted. The technology at issue involves using plasma, ionized gas, as actuators on aircraft, and you can click links to read more about that. The AP writes, quote, "The charges involve work performed from 2004 to 2006 by Roth, the student, and a university spinoff company, for an Air Force contract to develop flight controls for unmanned aircraft or drones. Prosecutor said Roth and the company he helped found, Atmospheric Glow Technologies Incorporated," and that's it, atmosphericglow.com, "failed to get government permission before involving foreign national Xindai in the work." That's X-I-N-D-A-I. So more espionage there. And as we jump to some of the kings of intelligence espionage, the Carlyle Group is acquiring Booz Allen Hamilton, and we've mentioned Booz Allen Hamilton and their government intel contracting work, and we've, of course, mentioned the Carlyle Group, the iron triangle between the government, the military contractors, and you. So if we hit up DeseretNews.com, Carlyle Group to acquire Booz Allen Hamilton. Carlyle Group, the private equity firm run by David Rubenstein and, of course, involving Poppy Bush, agreed to acquire Booz Allen Hamilton Incorporated's U.S. government consulting business for $2.54 billion, its biggest buyout since the credit markets collapsed last July. The Booz Allen Government Consulting Unit has more than 18,000 employees and annual sales of more than $2.7 billion. Its clients include branches of the U.S. military, the Department of Homeland Security, and, of course, the World Bank. And you can hit up links in there and hit up sourcewatch.org and the Washington Post and Wikipedia and more and learn about the Carlyle Group. Hitting again the AP, we're going all over the place. This is what I said at the beginning of the show. I'm a little disorganized, so pardon me if there's not a flowing thread through all this. It's just a bunch of horrible news thrown at you rapid fire. So, jumping to Philadelphia, a little bit of good news here. Four Philly cops to be fired over, of course, the notorious videotaped beating.
Philadelphia police continue to try to identify all the officers involved in the beating of three shooting suspects Monday night. A local TV helicopter camera rolled while more than a dozen officers kicked the three men for more than 1 minute. The mother of one of those men who was repeatedly kicked says the tape shows what happens in her community far too often when cameras are not around.
Where I live at, it's constantly that they're beating these young men. Constantly.
Leoma Dyches lives in a predominantly African-American section of North Philadelphia. Here, it's not hard to find people, mostly men, like this man, who does not want his name used, who say they've been harassed by police.
So you've been stopped by the police before?
Quite a few times, because my mother lives around here, and because I wear jeans and stuff when I'm off work and come over here and visit her, they assume that I'm up and no good and something like that, and I don't think that's right.
On average, there are about 30 serious physical complaints per year against Philadelphia police. That number has remained steady over the past 5 years. The city's police commissioner made clear the behavior of those officers on the tape was wrong. But he has concerns the officers' actions add weight to long-standing feelings in the African-American community that police are abusive.
Police are abusive. And of course, it's just one more piece of the program that's going on nationally, of course, that basically appears as though the police have been told to just go nuts. Taser people, beat the shit out of them. Cameras, fuck you. I don't care if there's a camera. We're going to beat you up. Or frame you. And is it all a part of some sinister plan to basically goad the populace into going apeshit on the police and killing a lot of them? So basically, when the shit hits the fan, you know, the average person who's just playing Grand Theft Auto right now and watching sports and drinking beer, they're going to get a little pissed when the banks fail and gas is $20. They're going to get a little mad. And they're probably going to go to the streets. And they're probably going to kill a bunch of cops. And I believe the powers that be are going to let that first wave of cops get wasted. And then they'll really unleash the sound wave cannons and the stormtroopers. Moving to thinkprogress.org, here's a word to file away another one in invasive government surveillance. Maine Corps, mass surveillance for national emergencies. Last year, former Deputy Attorney General James Comey, C-O-M-E-Y, revealed that in 2004 he refused to certify the legality of certain aspects of the NSA's spy program. Comey's testimony implied that other programs exist for domestic spying outside of the NSA program. Radar Magazine's Christopher Ketchum suggests that another spy program does exist, and it's called Maine Corps, M-A-I-N-C-O-R-E, a program that authorizes computer searches through massive, unspecified electronic databases in order to discover potential threats in the event of a, quote, national emergency. And if you followed any of the executive orders or national security presidential directives, you know that now a national emergency is basically anything the commander-in-chief wants to say it is. Whether it's terrorists, whether it's weather wars, or whether it's you getting uppity. Jumping back to Joe Israel First Lieberman, he sent a letter to... Who did he send it to? We've got the link up. Well, I'll just back up. Lieberman demands Google and YouTube censorship. So this article from Kurt Nemo. Joe Lieberman, Senator and Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee Chairman, wants to censor what you watch on Google and YouTube. Lieberman has sent a letter to Eric Schmidt, Google CEO, accusing the corporation of allowing, quote, offensive material on its site, namely videos produced by Al-Qaeda and other Islamist terror groups, whether they're phony or not. Joe wants these taken down immediately and demands Google prevent them from reappearing. As of this posting, no word of Schmidt has responded, but a letter sent by bigwig commissioners such as Lieberman is nothing to take lightly. Schmidt and his corporate lawyers have likely confabbed. you know, and as long as we're talking about all these fake-ass terror videos and Bin Laden and Adam, the phony grandson of ADL. If I, like, you know, went on a crime spree and videotaped it and uploaded it, they would catch me in a fucking heartbeat. Or if, you know, some dumbass kids in the Midwest videotape themselves beating up somebody and upload it, they get busted and they're all going to jail for a long time. But somehow the most wanted terrorist in the world can upload all these videos and we just don't know where it's coming from. Damn. I smell bullshit. Let's jump back to Philadelphia. The Philadelphia Inquirer. Spanish firm offers $12.8 billion to buy the Pennsylvania Turnpike. A Spanish toll road operator won the bidding war to operate the Pennsylvania Turnpike, offering $12.8 billion for a 75-year lease, Governor Rendell said of Pennsylvania. In making the largest bid ever for the private operation of a U.S. toll road, Abertis, which is the name of the Spanish firm, and we link to them, partnered with a subsidiary of U.S. investment bank Citigroup, thanks Citigroup, and also another Spanish investment firm, Criteria Caixa Corp. That's C-A-I-X-A. Not sure how you say that. And it's, again, just part and parcel with everything must go. Our entire infrastructure is for sale. We're selling everything to foreign corporations just to keep our phony Federal Reserve inflated bullshit economy afloat as everybody creeps toward the door. Close to home in Seattle, if we jump to thenewspaper.com, thanks to Lee Rogers at roguegovernment.com, Seattle expands their red light camera program. A city traffic engineer admitted reducing the length of yellow lights at downtown Seattle-Washington intersections by half a second. Seattle Traffic Management Director Wayne Wentz, W-E-N-T-Z, told the Seattle Post-Intelligencer newspaper that the reduction was not designed to increase the profit of the city's expanding red light camera program. Instead, the changes made at more than 200 intersections in March were designed to increase traffic flow. Now, I have the flashback linked up. Six U.S. cities tamper with traffic cameras for profit. And you can hit up those links, and you can, of course, see the proof that companies like Lockheed are involved in red light camera programs, and, of course, they lower the yellow light timing, therefore increasing accidents and increasing tickets as you try and flee the megacities. Shifting gears and hitting up Raw Story and their video site, Raw Replay, that I like to hit up. It's interesting. I know in the last several months, or rather several months ago, we had ex-View co-host Rosie O'Donnell bringing out 9/11 Truth in a way that probably all the housewives that watch The View out there would never check out. They had James Brolin on there saying, hey, go check out 911weknow.com. And he had Rosie talking about Building 7. And of course, their ratings plummeted after Rosie O'Donnell left. So it's interesting now, The View is back in the news with putting out little amazing bits of truthful nuggets out there in the public sphere. So it's Joy Behar that dropped this little nugget for you on The View just a couple days ago.
Interesting and ironic that George Bush Sr.'s, George Bush, this one, yeah, his grandfather, this one, the late, well, I don't like to speak ill of the dead, but in this case it's fun. He was a United States Senator, Prescott Bush.
Yes.
Okay, he was a director and shareholder of companies that profited from their involvement with the financial backers of Nazi Germany. Okay? This is his grandfather. He has no business talking to Jewish people when he's got this right in his backyard.
You want to talk about backyard, then how come you can bring up this backyard, but then it's not all right to dig into Obama's backyard?
Because there isn't documented proof, like there is with George Walker Bush, that his family built their fortune from the Nazis. Now, of course, they didn't dive into it, and you notice the crowd gets real fucking quiet after she mentions that our president is the son of Nazi profiteers. A part of what is basically the Fourth Reich. And so I put some links in there for you. You know, we've hit this a million times before, but it's always worth mentioning, of course, and as Joy Behar mentions, in this case, it's fun. Prescott Bush and UBC, Union Banking Corporation, they had their assets seized under the Trading with the Enemy Act long after we knew what Hitler was up to. And all that, of course, even if you believe the official version of all these things, we knew what he was up to by then. Now, of course, if you want to dive into where he learned how to do what he did, I implore you to do that. So let's hit up another quick one. And of course, as neocon stooge Hasselbeck that you heard there on The View mentioned Obama, getting into a little bit more of the elections this last Tuesday here in Oregon. Of course, in Oregon, we do things a little differently. We're the only state in the nation that does a purely mail-in ballot. So Secretary of State Bill Bradbury was on CNN on Election Day on May 20th.
Now, counting kicks off today in Oregon's primary, the only state to conduct its voting entirely by mail. Voters have had 2 weeks now to return their ballots, which were sent out on May 2nd. But not everyone thinks a mail-in vote is a good idea. Joining me now, Oregon Secretary of State Bill Bradbury in Portland, Oregon. Love that state. Love to visit the coast there in Yahuts. You and I have talked about that before. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you, and we're very excited here to be starting to count our votes in our vote-by-mail election.
And tell us how this works.
Well, ballots go out about, like you said, a couple weeks before the election. People vote pretty consistently up to the date of the election, and county elections officials check every signature on every ballot against the voter registration signature of that person. And then on election day, today, they start to count the ballots in the morning so that by about 8 o'clock tonight, we will have a pretty good read on, we'll have over 50% of the ballots counted, so our first results that get announced are pretty representative sample of who's going to win and who's going to lose in the state of Oregon.
Well, is this improved voter turnout because it's a hassle to stand in those lines and have to drive around? Have you seen a difference?
Yes, we've seen a difference. We see a particular difference in lower turnout elections. Presidential elections have always been an incredibly high turnout in Oregon, 86.5% in the last presidential election. So vote by mail probably doesn't increase turnout dramatically in presidential elections. It just makes it a whole lot easier for people to cast their ballot. And if they have to work, they don't have to go stand in line for 2 or 3 hours. They just drop their ballot in the mail and it's handled from there.
That's Bill Bradbury, Secretary of State here in Oregon on CNN. On Election Day, just a few days ago, I dropped my ballot in the drop box downtown at the last minute, of course, with my proud vote for RonPaul2008.com. I'm not going to change my mind. I'm not going to jump on some bullshit bandwagon. Change you can believe in my ass, and we'll get to that. But, of course, at the bottom of the ballot, it still mentions that it's run by ES&S. So you should look up Election Systems and Services, ES&S. But that's just a little bit of election news. We're all out of order, and we're going to get back to the coming of the Obamasiah here to Portland. But first, let's jump to Wiki News. Airline hijacker found working for British Airways. A man who hijacked a domestic flight over Afghanistan has been found to be working for British Airways. 34-year-old Nazimuddin Mohammadi was one of 9 men who forced the Ariana Airlines airliner to divert to the United Kingdom's Stansted Airport in 2000. Mohammadi was jailed for 30 months, but he and the other 8 had their convictions overturned by the Court of Appeal, claiming the Taliban was subjecting them to medieval and brutal tyranny, forcing them to flee. It has since emerged that British Airways have employed Mohammadi to clean their offices, including a training center 1 mile from Terminal 4 at Heathrow Airport. So there's your phony security at your airport. If we jump to techradar.com, the Pirate Bay, of course, one of my favorite file sharing networks, has hit the big time, and they've entered Alexa's top 100. It's been the bane of Hollywood since its inception in 2004, but the self-billed world's largest BitTorrent tracker has finally hit the big time by entering the list of the 100 most visited websites on the net, finding itself at number 97, according to web information company Alexa. Now, of course, there's interesting flicks that you can watch called Steal This Film, Part 1 and 2, all about the Pirate Bay and the raid on their Swedish offices, and of course, the U.S. and the RIAA trying to lean on Sweden, so they raided their offices. Of course, it was overturned immediately because the U.S. doesn't have jurisdiction to go doing raids in Sweden. And then Steal This Film Part 2 actually takes the broader view and looks at the Gutenberg Revolution and the peer-to-peer revolution. Shifting gears to something a little more dirty. Drug cartels to Mexican police. Join us or die. And so we've got a lot of stories. We've got Fox News. We've got Narconews.com, BlacklistedNews.com, Canada.com, and Infowars.com. Drug cartels are sending a brutal message to police and soldiers in cities across Mexico. Join us or die. The threat appears in recruiting banners hung across roadsides and in publicly posted death lists. Cops get warnings over their two-way radios. And at least four high-ranking police officials were gunned down this month, including Mexico's acting federal police chief. So here it seems that the taboo of cop killing doesn't really apply. And so if we hit a link, which I haven't really been doing in this episode, I'm just giving you the articles. And like I said, you got to use MediaMonarchy.com. I buffer and buffet all the stories I post up with a lot of links so I can give you context to all these things that are going on. So if we hit this link and hit roguegovernment.com, the war on terror does not apply to Mexico. The southern United States border with Mexico is starting to resemble a combat zone. The U.S. State Department recently issued an alert stating that the equivalent of a military small unit combat is taking place around the border. There's also been a recent report of four American citizens being executed in this area. They were found in a shallow grave. There is more proof that the global war on terror is a complete fraud, and the current administration has no desire to protect this nation's borders or the American people. The administration would prefer to have our military in over 100 countries, claiming that they are spreading freedom and democracy, than have a military presence along the southern U.S. border to ensure this sort of activity doesn't actually spill over into the U.S. If the global war on terror were real, then they would be doing something about what is going on at the border in Mexico. And with that, we're into hour number two of MediaMonarchy.com. It's episode 76, and it's May 23rd, 2008. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you every week from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and the Revere Radio Network, revereradio.info, revereradionetwork.com, and lots of other little permutations there for you at the worldwide home of free speech. You can, of course, hit me up, MySpace, Dig, YouTube, Yahoo, and get the podcast from archive.org and radioforall.net. Quick mention of an editorial up on thepeoplesvoice.org. Assassination, a game for all. Assassination is the targeted killing of persons, usually for political or ideological and often insane motives. It's okay, but not okay. In 1976, U.S. President Ford issued an executive order which was enacted after revelations that the CIA made several attempts on the life of Cuba's Fidel Castro. Henceforward, targeted political killings were outlawed. Quote, no employee of the United States government shall engage in or conspire to engage in political assassination, end quote. Every U.S. president since then has upheld Ford's prohibition on assassinations or somehow got around it. And if we want to jump back 50 plus years, new revelations. This from the AP. And there's a lot of links in this story and a lot of brutal, ugly photos. Thousands killed in 1950 by U.S.'s Korean ally. Grave by mass grave, South Korea is unearthing the skeletons and buried truths of a cold-blooded slaughter from early in the Korean War, when this nation's U.S.-backed regime killed untold thousands of leftists and hapless peasants in a summer of terror in 1950. With U.S. military officers sometimes present, and as North Korean invaders pushed down the peninsula, the Southern Army and police emptied South Korean prisons, lined up detainees, and shot them in the head, dumping the bodies into hastily dug trenches. Others were thrown into abandoned mines or into the sea. Women and children were among those killed. Many victims never faced charges or trial. And that's just one more example of the United States government corporation propping up bloodthirsty regimes around the globe, and of course, knocking them down when it suits our needs. And you can look at Iran and Guatemala and Chile and Iraq, and the list goes on and on. As we jump back home, and as we mentioned the crumbling economy, there's an interesting article from the New York Times. As prices rise, snoops and snitches work overtime. To gas prices, foreclosure rates, and the cost of rice, add this rising economic indicator: the number of tips to police from people hoping to collect reward money. With tipsters telling operators they need the money for rent, light bills, or baby formula. Quote, "For this year, everyone that's called has pretty much been just looking for money," said Sergeant Lawrence Beller, who answers Crime Stoppers calls at the Sussex County, New Jersey Sheriff's Office. That's as opposed to the last couple of years where some people were just sick of the crime and wanting to do something about it. So, reading that back to you, he's basically saying, well, it used to be that people were concerned about, you know, their communities and their neighborhoods. Now things are so shitty, I'm going to turn in my grandson for smoking weed because I got to pay the light bill. And so, I add the link over to crime.stoppers.net over at Sussex County. And so you can hop over there and report a crime. I suggest maybe something like the stealing of a nation. Shifting gears yet again, my friends, on this 76th episode of MediaMonarchy.com, under the headline, pick one, prison, family detention center, or Xenu University. Let's explain. First, U.S. to build vast prison in Afghanistan. This from the AFP. The U.S. plans to build a vast new detention camp at its main military base in Afghanistan. I can confirm there are indeed plans to build a new detention facility at Bagram Airfield, spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wright told the French agency press. And the overall size is expected to be 40 acres, but probably not a mule. The move came because our existing theater facility is deteriorating. Just as a sidebar mention, isn't it funny that they always call it theater? Because it's a big fucking show. Our existing theater facility is deteriorating, Wright said, referring to the makeshift jail at Bagram that holds alleged extremist militants rounded up in the U.S. War on Terror, launched after the phony 9/11 military black op. Jumping to the AP, dovetailing with the previous story nicely, U.S. admits holding juvenile combatants. The U.S. military is holding about 500 juveniles, little kids, suspected of being, quote, unlawful enemy combatants in detention centers in Iraq, and has about 10 detained at the U.S. base at Bagram, Afghanistan, the United States has told the U.N. And I'm sure the U.N. nodded with their blessing. Yes. Yes, let the blood flow. A total of 2,500 youths under the age of 18 have been detained, almost all in Iraq, under W's anti-terrorism campaign. And so this was all reported by the U.S. last week to the U.N.'s Committee on the Rights of a Child. Jumping to the Los Angeles Times, LATimes.com, the feds take bids on new detention camps. So basically, that's the feds are taking bids on who can build the greatest new internment camps. The federal government is accepting bids for up to 3 new family detention centers. That's the key phrase, family detention centers. That would house as many as 600 men, women, and children fighting deportation cases. And of course, that's all for the public spectacle of it. It's all for this immigration psyop. But soon it will be for you. Because again, you're going to get uppity. You're going to get mad. You may not be mad now, but you're going to get fucking mad. Anyway, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, issued a call for proposals last month and set June 16th as the deadline. New facilities are being considered on both coasts and on the southwestern border. There are 2 current family facilities, and one is a former nursing home in Pennsylvania, and that's called the Berks County Shelter Care Facility. Berks, B-E-R-K-S, and that's in Pennsylvania, former nursing home in Pennsylvania. And the other is a former prison in Texas, and that's the T. Don Hutto Family Detention Center. Coming soon to a town near you. And of course, just look up places like the Geo Group and learn about the greatest growing industry in America. That's private, for-profit prisons. Shifting gears yet again to something a little lighter, this coming from The Guardian, but I never like to pass up a chance to make fun of the cult of Scientology, and the amazing thing that's definitely happened over the last several years is that most of the biggest movie stars in the world are students of L. Ron Hubbard. Will Smith to open his very own Scientology school. Actor Will Smith is funding his own private school that will teach youngsters using an educational system devised in part by the Scientology cult. The curriculum at Smith's New Village Academy of Calabasas, on which he's already spent £500,000, again, this is coming from The Guardian, and that's why they so blatantly called it a cult. The place is going to use different educational theories, including, quote, study technology. And you can go to studytechnology.org and see all about it. That's a learning method developed by L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of the cult of Scientology. And as we've mentioned a million times, you're only a hop, skip, and a jump when you're talking about L. Ron Hubbard and Scientology to hit up Aleister Crowley and Charles Manson and Jack Parsons and Babylon Working and massive occult operations. But now, the moment is here, my friends. I can feel the excitement. Oh my God, I can feel it. Yes. Oh, he's here. The Obamasiah has brought Kool-Aid to the thirsty Portland masses.
Hello, Portland! Wow. 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 Thank you! Thank you, everybody! Thank you! Well, let me begin by saying this. We have had a lot of rallies around the country. I think it is fair to say that this is the most spectacular setting for the most spectacular crowd that we have had in this entire campaign. This is unbelievable. Thank you! Thank you. Now, it doesn't hurt that it's a perfect day.
Well, and of course it doesn't hurt that your opening act was one of the biggest indie rock bands in the country, the Decemberists. But anyway, before I'll attack this wolf in sheep's clothing, I will admit the small bit of pride of having this massive event. It's kind of cool when your town becomes the center of the world for a day. However, my friends, Barack Obama is not the change you can believe in. As I already mentioned to you, don't you even remember, do you not fucking remember a year and a half ago when you voted the Democrats in because they were going to impeach and they were going to end the war? and it's all off the table. It was never on the table. It was only on the table long enough to get you to come out in force and think that something is going to change while we watch the WWF show of the Democrats and the Republicans beat us up 8 years at a time. So I have the posting up with the video that I didn't actually realize when I first posted it up, but the Raw Story, Raw Replay, and KGW.com, our local, one of our local news stations, they've got Obama's whole speech up there, so I didn't realize I'd posted up a 45-minute speech, but it's up there. Under the heading of Obamasiah brings Kool-Aid to thirsty Portland masses. However, are these examples of the kind of, quote, change that you want? As we mentioned last week with Alex Ansari here in studio with me, I played the little clip where Obama, a couple weeks ago in Bend, Oregon, hailed Poppy Bush's excellent job, quote, excellent job, on the first Gulf War, because he basically says it was cheap and effective. We also know recently that Lee Hamilton, one of the chairmen of the official 9/11 cover-up commission, he supports Barack Obama. We, of course, know that Obama and Clinton, and, of course, McCain, they all pledge to defend Israel against Iran and say that all options are on the table. We also have, a couple months ago here in Oregon, fortunately, somebody asked Obama about his connection to the Council on Foreign Relations. And, of course, he said, I don't know if I'm a member. Of course, his wife is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. His chief financial advisor is Skull and Bones. Of course, his chief foreign policy advisor is Zbigniew Brzezinski, Carter's national security director, the man who helped fund the Mujahideen in Afghanistan in the late 70s, thereby creating Al-Qaeda. We know that Obama's family tree, of course, includes the Bushes and the Cheneys, and it's funny that Obama makes that nice little joke out there that his cousin Dick, it's oh so fucking funny that all you elites are related and rub it in our faces, and that you all tie into the bloodlines. You know what bloodlines I'm talking about. And we've hit up some of the articles like the Obama Rapture and, of course, Hope, Change, and Pissing in the Wind of Obama, Democrats, and the Power Elite. And it's all up there, my friends. I said it last week. I'll say it again. The WHO were fucking wrong. You will get fooled again and again and again. However, of course, have the sort of running internal pit of my stomach, not feeling that we're, in the words of Doc Brown, we're going to see some serious shit. I think we're in store for an interesting few months. I don't put anything past the Clinton crime family. And I think building up this messiah like Obama, only to be knocked down, however it could happen, could that be the right thing to make you get uppity and get mad and get into the streets? And again, it's problem, reaction, solution. They can't fully come down on us until we get violent. And when we get violent, that gives them the reason for martial law. So there's a lot to think about, but you need to keep an eye out on just the memes and the provocateur ideas that are out there about this election. And the memes that you see of words like Civil War and Recreate 68, it's scary and dangerous. But I'm going to shift gears. I get all, yeah, I get a little worked up. So here's something funny. Taser International uses Playboy bunnies to sell its products. And so, as mentioned by the feminist PeaceNetwork.org, who says there isn't an intimate connection between sex and violence. But the original story coming from CommonDreams.org, Vancouver businessman Randy Pooter was drawn to the booth operated by Taser International at the Consumer Trade Show in Vegas last January, which we covered, because they have the new Tasers that have MP3 players. Playboy bunnies were signing photographs while salesmen pitched a new personal Taser that's small enough to fit into a woman's purse. It was excellent marketing, Pooter told a public inquiry Thursday probing the use of tasers in British Columbia. He got a signed photo from the Playboy Bunny, which he showed to the Vancouver Sun. It has the Taser Company logo on it. He asked if he was asked who he wanted it signed to, and he said, half jokingly, the Vancouver Police Board. And then he kind of realized that he was shocked, and that's why he went to the public inquiry. Pooter told the inquiry that, "I was shocked, actually, which is why I'm here today," pointing out that his late brother, Gil Pooter, was the use of force trainer with Vancouver Police from 1990 to 93. Pooter said he was concerned, he was a concerned citizen, and suggested a moratorium should be placed on taser use until there can be proper testing in Canada. As we see the use of the taser and the phony, less-than-lethal weapon being deployed as just one small bit of weaponry in the arsenal of the police state. Jumping to Crooks and Liars, and I think that, again, as I mentioned, I took a break a couple weeks ago, got a new computer, and so what should have been on episode 75 last week was the previous 2 weeks of news. So I've got a little bit of a black hole of news that I haven't read into the record on the radio show. And I think I'm just trying to break through this sort of obsessive compulsive need to cover every single thing that's on the website into the radio show. So in this black hole of news, we of course know from the New York Times that there are hundreds of retired generals that are propaganda mouthpieces on the news networks. You know, when you see those guys, "Oh, I'm just a retired general. You know, I don't speak for anybody," but they go on and say that we need to attack Iran, and Iran is Al-Qaeda, and Shia is Sunni, and all of that. But a nice follow-up to a lot of this. Coming from Crooks and Liars, Pentaganda general calls for U.S. terrorism against Iran. Last month on Fox News, retired General Thomas McHenry, one of the Pentagon's propaganda team of military analysts, and that's the link to the original breaking news of it a couple weeks ago, which, again, exposed by David Barstow in the New York Times, McHenry openly called for the U.S. to begin committing tit-for-tat terrorist attacks by proxy inside Iran.
"I want to show more of Admiral Mullen. Apparently, according to him, the Iranians are not only helping the Iraqis, also our enemies in Afghanistan." More from Admiral Mullen.
They continue to train Iraqis to in Iran to come back and fight Americans in the coalition. They continue to broadly support terrorists in other part of the region, whether it's Hezbollah or Hamas. And in fact, we're seeing some evidence that they're supporting the Taliban in Afghanistan. So it continues to be a broad approach, and I just don't see any evidence of them backing off.
Your solution in a moment, but if we do have evidence, and apparently we do, according to officials, that Iran is killing U.S. troops in Iraq or supporting that, why haven't we struck by now?
That beats me, Greg. I don't know why we haven't. They have killed hundreds of Americans with their explosively formed projectiles. And that's why I think we have to take action. And here's what I would suggest to you. Number one, we take the National Council for Resistance in Iran off the terrorist list that the Clinton administration put them on, as well as the Mujahideen-e Khaliq that are at Camp Ashraf in Iraq. Then I would start a tit-for-tat strategy, which I wrote up in the Wall Street Journal a year ago. For every EFP that goes off that kills Americans, two go off in Iran. No questions asked. People don't know how to have to know how it was done. It's covert action. They become the most unlucky country in the world. And then I would start moving U.S. carrier battle groups into the region, as well as some of our stealth aircraft, just to make sure they understand, don't try to kick off a major insurrection come October and September, October, to impact our elections. They are deliberately ratcheting up, as Admiral Mullen has said, and we've got to counter that.
Well, there would certainly be major ramifications from such a strategy and policy, but we'll see if the policy leaders in Washington adopt your strategy. Lieutenant General Tom McInerney, good to see you. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Greg. Great seeing you.
Also, let's see if Washington decides to really go live with the false flag ops that always precede any military action. So the nice follow-up to that, my friends, is a little article called Iran Busts CIA-Backed Terror Group. So this from Paul Joseph Watson. The Iranian intelligence ministry busted a CIA-backed terror group that was planning to bomb scientific, educational, and religious centers and carry out assassinations, according to a report in the Tehran Times. The arrests come weeks after retired General Thomas McHenry urged the U.S. to carry out terror bombings in Iran. Quote, the intelligence ministry released details of the detection and dismantling of a terrorist network affiliated to the United States. So reports the Tehran Times. So even devil's advocate, you could say, well, that's just the Iranians saying that. But again, the meme is out there of provocateur false flag terrorism. Back on the crumbling home front, it's the return of the no work list, which we went over way back in June of 2006 on MediaMonarchy.com. This time it's from McClatchy. Employment Verification Plan, Big Brother or Big Improvement? For critics, the idea is an Orwellian nightmare. The federal government would begin signing off on every hiring decision made in the U.S. Whether it's regarded as a Big Brother or as a Big Improvement, the plan is getting a good vetting on Capitol Hill. It has enormous implications for employers and the Social Security Administration, which would conduct the background checks. The ACLU, which opposes the plan, says the legislation would create a, quote, no-work list. You got the no-fly list, we're going to have a no-work list. Americans should not have to ask their federal government if they have permission to accept a new job, said Caroline Fredrickson, the director of the ACLU's Washington Legislative Office. So the flashback-related articles to that, job seekers must obtain Homeland Security approval. That's back in August 07, and as I just mentioned, the original No Work List article back in June 2006. And again, it's all under the guise of, it's for the illegals. It's for you. Getting into a little bit of the neocons over at PNAC. Project for a New American Century. Those were the guys, you'll recall, that back in 2000 wrote a little think tank paper called Rebuilding America's Defenses, basically laying out the strategy for a new American imperialism abroad and all the things that they want to do. However, they had to say that, of course, all these things would be very difficult, unless, of course, there's a catalyzing new event like a new Pearl Harbor. And god damn it, wouldn't you know it, they got it. And all the guys who signed off on the paper were all the guys who came into the new administration, like Rumsfeld and Cheney and Wolfowitz and Abrams and Kristol and Kagan and all those guys. Now, interestingly, this from thinkprogress.org, 11 years ago, the neoconservative Project for a New American Century set out its statement of principles advocating the overthrow of Saddam, putting the country on the road to a preventative invasion of Iraq. Signatories included, as I mentioned, future Iraq War architects Rumsfeld, Cheney, Wolfowitz, Abrams, Kristol, and Kagan. But just as the neocons are attempting to run from their responsibility for the Iraq War, it appears PNAC may be abandoning its own website. So if you go to, if you attempt to go to New American Century, all you get is a little sign that says, this account has been suspended. Please contact Billing and Support Department as soon as possible. But fortunately, we've of course saved all their documents that they had up that of course basically lay out what they wanted to do, and they did it. So you don't have to have a crystal ball, you don't have to be a genius, you don't have to prognosticate and look at symbols and astrology and numerology. They pretty much write down what they're going to do. And they want endless war, and they want to bring the third world to the United States. And probably get rid of 80% of us. But anyway, let's jump to Reuters. UN racism investigator to visit the U.S. A special UN human rights investigator will visit the United States this month to probe racism, an issue that has forced its way into the race to secure the Democratic Party's presidential nomination. The United Nations said Doudou Dien, that's Doudou Dien, would meet federal and local officials, as well as lawmakers and judicial authorities, during the May 19th to June 16th visit. The special rapporteur will gather firsthand information on issues related to racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, and related intolerance. Now, again, we're back on the election. the selection, the presidential selection. Again, here's the meme. The meme is out there. Chaos for the 2008 election. During a speech before the National Rifle Association convention Friday afternoon in Louisville, Kentucky, former Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee, who has endorsed presumptive GOP nominee John McCain, and there's of course talk of Huckabee being the VP, Huckabee joked that an unexpected offstage noise was actually Democrat Barack Obama diving to the floor looking to avoid a gunman.
But the reality is, and I'm worried because, frankly, within the... That was Barack Obama. He just tripped off a chair. He's getting ready to speak, and somebody aimed a gun at him, and he dove for the floor.
You notice the crowd gets a little quiet. You know, you may think they may be NRA gun nuts, but even those guys go, dude, what the fuck did you just say? So, of course, Huckabee apologized for saying that there were people aiming a gun at Barack Obama. If we jump to WUFU, and also from Time, the one-child policy, of course, that we've mentioned on the show, that UN ambassador to China, George H.W. Bush, back in the 70s, of course, got China to sign off on their one-child policy, of course, because the Bush crime family, you know, they like to put their fingers in everything, little eugenics, little Nazi profiteering, you know. So, one-child policy decimates China after the quake. After their daughter was born, Bi Kuai and his wife, Mei Lin, decided to adhere to China's one-child policy and its slogan, "Have fewer kids, live better lives. Work will make you free." For them and other couples who lost an only child in last week's massive earthquake, the tragedy has been doubly cruel. Robbed of their sole progeny and a hope for the future, they find it even harder to restart their shattered lives, haunted by added guilt, regret, and gnawing loss. One-child policy decimates China. Jumping again to globalresearch.ca, illegally spy on Americans and win fabulous prizes. Fingered by whistleblowers Mark Klein and Babak Pazdar for their role in illegally spying on Americans, AT&T and Verizon were awarded a major contract by the Department of Homeland Stupidity. Washington Technology reports, quote, "Verizon Business will perform the lion's share of the work on the Homeland Security Department's OneNet. O-N-E-N-E-T, one word, OneNet telecommunications contract with support from AT&T Government Solutions." That's the final solution. If we jump to the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, Operation Terminal Stinger is set for the Pennsylvania airport June 6th and 7th. Arnold Palmer Regional Airport in Unity, Pennsylvania, will be the site of an emergency response training exercise, Operation Terminal Stinger, for June 6th and 7th at the facility near Latrobe. The exercise is required by the FAA and will feature a scenario in which a terrorist cell will down an aircraft with a shoulder-fired missile. And now, as we look at summer coming yet again here on the West Coast, it's going to be time, yes, my friends, for the world's elite to meet and greet and frolic naked and perform mock druid rituals at the Bohemian Grove, yes! But if we jump to the Washington Post, Bohemian Grove wants to cut down a bunch of redwood trees because they need the dough. Which does, of course, beg the question, why would a bunch of elite bastards need extra dough? I think it's just that they want to expand their compound, probably. Immense power and staggering wealth are as deeply embedded in the traditions of the Bohemian Club as they are in the grove itself. 100 acres of old-growth redwoods spared from timber companies a century ago in the name of preservation, which only deepens the dismay that has greeted the club's request to the state of California for permission to log as much as 1 million board feet from the place to raise some cash. And so if you've never heard of the Bohemian Grove, there's links in that story that you can follow. And of course, as you know, probably that it was Alex Jones that snuck into the Bohemian Grove years ago and got out the first known scene footage of our world leaders. Of course, people like Nixon and Gingrich and the Bush families and Walter Cronkite and all those guys love to go there. And of course, I love to mention that one of the Nixon tapes has him mentioning the Bohemian Grove, in which he says it's the most faggy goddamn thing you could imagine. Jumping to something called Operation Sudden Fall. The man out of Austin, Texas, Kevin Booth, known for a lot of his early work with the genius Bill Hicks, and of course is associated with Alex Jones and Sacred Cow Productions and all that stuff out of Austin, Texas. He has a fantastic new documentary called American Drug War, The Last White Hope, and you can hit it up at AmericanDrugWar.com. You can, of course, watch bits of it online. It's run on Showtime a ton. Kevin recently put up a new video related to American Drug War that isn't actually in the film, and it's about recent drug-related university activity in California called Operation Sudden Fall.
Recently, at San Diego State University, a 19-year-old female student died of an apparent cocaine overdose. As a result of this death, the DEA, working with campus police, ran a massive undercover operation that has resulted in the arrests of almost 100 students.
Graduation photos are being replaced with mugshots today after a huge drug bust on the campus of San Diego State University. Joining us, local college students who once had bright futures are getting a real life lesson tonight in our criminal justice system.
After being caught in a five-month-long investigation consisting of more than 130 undercover drug buys, it was launched by campus police after 19-year-old Alpha Phi sorority member Shirley Jennifer Polyakov was found dead of a cocaine overdose.
Obviously, the death of this girl is tragic, and locking up the man or men responsible is necessary. But had this young woman died from alcohol, as thousands do every year, would there have been such a mad dash to arrest anyone simply because they sold an undercover cop a beer or a pint of whiskey? Or did they use classic drug war tactics in order to elevate the drug threat to a ridiculous conclusion, causing almost 100 students to have their lives torn apart and not graduate?
Besides all those arrests you've been talking about, investigators also collected 50 pounds of marijuana, 4 pounds of cocaine, and 350 ecstasy pills.
Why does our government allow certain drugs, such as alcohol and tobacco, to kill almost a million Americans per year, and yet they are willing to arrest people for growing a pot plant or selling an undercover agent a few joints? Presiding very close to San Diego, Superior Court Judge James Gray is forced to deal with hundreds of marijuana arrests a week.
I am convinced that if we were to regulate marijuana like alcohol, soon we would probably have less marijuana usage than we have today. And that usage would be far more responsible, and people would, in effect, those that were using it would probably come down the drug ladder in order to use it, because a lot of people that are using harder drugs have marijuana as their drug of choice.
Back when I was in school, the guy you bought your pot from was usually a tie-dye, overall-wearing farm boy with a sticky green thumb. But as Nixon's drug war progresses towards its fifth decade, many college pot dealers not only sell much harder drugs, but now they have to be well-armed.
Just 24 hours after undercover officers seized more than $100,000 worth of drugs, weapons, and cash in Operation Sudden Fall, the largest bust in campus history.
English professor Peter Herman says it's not the drugs that surprise him, but the weapons.
I am absolutely shocked. I'm less shocked about the drugs part, but I'm absolutely shocked about the firearms. That is really, really scary.
You're right, it's scary. And so that's a clip called Operation Sudden Fall from Kevin Booth. And you should check out his new documentary, American Drug War. It, of course, exposes the complete fraud of the war on drugs, much like the war on terror. The idea is to instigate more terror. The idea is to bring in more drugs. They bring in the drugs, and then they arrest you for using them and put you in their private run-for-profit prisons. It's a nice little scam. Shifting gears yet again, if we jump to trading markets. Feds misled the National Cattle Congress about the use of fairgrounds. Alex and I touched on this just a little bit last week on episode 75 about the raids that happened in Iowa at the agri-processor plant where they rounded up undocumented / illegal workers. It was a massive psyop. Lee Rogers at RogueGovernment.com smelled it a mile away and a good week or two in advance basically said, hey, the feds have rented this place, and it looks like they're gearing up to do some kind of psyop raid. Sure enough, wouldn't you know it, they raid the place. They rented out a massive facility, and of course, it's all just... It's under the guise of it's for the illegals, but they're training to take over regular American cities. And if you happen to get in the way, then, oh well. But some of the fallout from all that, there's still a lot of fallout. So one of the latest is feds misled National Cattle Congress about use of fairgrounds. Officials with the National Cattle Congress, and you can go to nationalcattlecongress.com, may have been misled about the federal government, or rather by the federal government, with regard to the use of their facilities. The board did not know the grounds and facilities would be used to round up illegals. And so, one of the guys interviewed was asked, am I misled by my federal government? Probably frequently.
Federal agents raided this meatpacking plant in Iowa on Monday after months of planning and investigation.
Those agents are executing a criminal search warrant for evidence relating to aggravated identity theft, fraudulent use of Social Security numbers, and other crimes, as well as a civil search warrant for people illegally in the United States.
In all, more than 300 people were loaded onto buses and taken away. 44 were later released, most of them because they have children to take care of.
Those individuals would be identified, served with a notice to appear, and have to appear before an immigration judge. However, it's not required that they stay in custody.
Other workers at the plant stood outside, watching and wondering what would happen to their friends.
So the original article from all this is posted up on MediaMonarchy.com under the heading, Iowa ICE, Illegal Immigrant Raid, Part of FEMA Drill. And again, another update, immigration raid jars small town. This from the Washington Post. The raid on the agri-processors plant, in which 389 immigrants were arrested and many held at a cattle exhibit hall, was the Bush administration's largest crackdown on illegal workers at a single site. It has upended this tree-lined community, which calls itself the, quote, hometown to the world. Half of the school system's 600 students were absent the next day, including 90% of its Hispanic children, because their parents were arrested or hiding. They don't go after employers. They don't put CEOs in jail, complained the Postville Community School Superintendent David Strudhoff, 51, who said the sudden incarceration of more than 10% of the town's population of 2,300, quote, is like a natural disaster, only this one is man-made. Now, I haven't heard back from him. I don't know if I expect to, but I had the link over to the Postville Community School Superintendent and hit the email for David Strudhoff and just basically said, hey man, I saw you mentioned in the Washington Post article, and I just wondered if you knew that this raid started out as a drill, and hit him up with the appropriate links. And so, who knows, maybe he hit it, and maybe he initially said, well, you know, you're a kook, but it's all about planting the seeds. Shifting to the Daily Record, this is a fucked up one. DailyRecord.co.uk. Woman sat dead in front of her TV for 42 years. The remains of a woman have been found sitting in front of her TV 42 years after she was reported missing. Hedviga Golic, who was born in 1924, had apparently made herself a cup of tea before sitting in her favorite armchair in front of her black and white television. Croatian police said she was last seen by neighbors in 1966, when she would have been 42 years old. The cup she had been drinking tea from was still on the table next to the chair she had been sitting in, and the house was full of things no one had seen for decades. Nothing had been disturbed for decades, even though there were more than a few cobwebs in there. So that's just the disturbing, allegorical look of a corpse in front of a TV for 42 years. Jumping to McClatchy, DC.com. ATF, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Bureau, ATF, should also stand for also Always Think Forfeiture. Federal agents will no longer be carrying pocket knives with the specially engraved training slogan that enraged some gun and property rights activists. U.S. Representative Bill Sally, S-A-L-I, Republican of Idaho, said last Friday that his complaints about the slogan, Always Think Forfeiture, persuaded the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and Explosives, don't forget that, to end its use on the Leatherman tools handed out to participants in a training program. Because it has caused concern among the public, we are no longer utilizing that slogan in our training sessions, he said. So, not because it's wrong or it's insensitive or because it is another element of the corrupt police institution, who, of course, under draconian drug laws, are allowed to confiscate. They call it asset forfeiture. You know, if you're suspected of being involved in anything, we can take all your shit. But so, because it has caused concern among the public, not because it's disturbing and wrong, but because we got caught and apparently you're mad, I'll act like I'm sorry and we'll stop for a little bit. Okay? Okay. It's at this point that I reach the end of all that I have for episode 76 of MediaMonarchy.com. As I mentioned previously, episode 75 featured a two-hour interview with Alex Ansari, so I didn't really go over much of the news that I had prepared for episode 75. So let's see what we can do here in the remaining 15 or so minutes by just cramming through a lot of this news. We mentioned, of course, that Bin Laden message condemned the Israeli anniversary. Bin Laden, of course, being highly active lately, releasing all kinds of videos, but of course, we just can't find where the videos are uploaded from. And when we do, it usually looks like they're coming from bizarre intelligence-connected fronts like Intel Center and Site. But anyway, we hit up news about the GMO food crisis and the U.S. using the food crisis to boost bioengineered crops. We know that the Tamiflu bird flu medicine is toxic for teens. Chemicals from Teflon found in human breast milk. We also have Alex Ansari's most recent show that's posted up to Google Video, Outside the Box number 153. It was from May 15th, the night before we did the interview. His guest was Tex Mars, that's TexeMarrs.com, and they talked about the new reality that the elites are manufacturing for us, namely artificial scarcity of food, water, and oil. We hit up, of course, what I just mentioned, the Iowa ICE and FEMA and Homeland Security PSYOP raid that actually, technically, is still running until May 25th. We have episode 43 of Collateral News, one of my favorite new news video shows up on YouTube, Collateral News. Episode 43 is called It's a Man's World, and it's all about, of course, the inconvenient story about all the sexual assault in the military. And of course, the DOD released a report just a couple weeks ago called Sexual Assault in the Military and mentions, of course, 2,688 cases of rape, sodomy, and indecent assault. And that's just 2007, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. We played the clip, the fantastic clip from Grand Theft Auto, that, of course, had the guy saying, I'm a dumbass, but I fight terror by arresting old ladies. So you can hit up that video, and that's Liberty City Police are there to help. Under the heading, The Change You Deserve, this is from the Washington Post. This is a funny one. House Republicans may be heading off a cliff in November, but give them credit for perseverance. Even after the new slogan they floated, The Change You Deserve, was discovered to be trademarked ad copy for the antidepressant drug Effexor. GOP leaders decided to go with the rollout anyway. Jumping to Danger Room, U.S. sonic blasters sold to China. And of course, those are the sound wave cannons coming soon to an uppity street demo near you. U.S. trained forces reportedly helping Mexican cartels. This, of course, dovetails with what we hit earlier in the show about the massive drug war just over the border into Mexico. And, of course, the war on terror doesn't apply to that. But the Houston Chronicle writes that as many as 200 U.S.-trained Mexican security personnel have defected to drug cartels to carry out killings on both sides of the border and as far north as Dallas. Representative Ted Poe of Humboldt, Texas, told Congress a couple Wednesdays ago. The renegade members of Mexico's elite counter-narcotics teams trained at Fort Benning, Georgia, have switched sides. My friends, you know what Fort Benning, Georgia is. It's what Susan Sarandon talks about. It's the School of Americas. It's where we train future Stasi death squad dictators. And we send them out and they do their thing. So now they've supposedly switched sides, contributing to a wave of violence that has claimed some 6,000 victims over the past 30 months, including prominent law enforcement leaders. We, of course, played the hilarious Bill O'Reilly Fuck It dance remix. And that's a related link in there. The corporate media prima donnas go ballistic. If you'd like to have fun watching, of course, corporate media talking heads curse and scream on air when they're not sure they're on air. We can, of course, hit up a bit of the 60th anniversary of the terrorist Zionist regime of Israel and their destruction of the Palestinians. So, of course, Palestinian refugees, of course, I don't even know what to say about that. What do you say about 60 years of death and destruction? We came to this area in a peaceful march against the occupation on this occasion. That's from the AFP. So we also have Bush celebrating and saying goodbye as he made possibly his last visit to Israel, which is where, of course, speaking to the Knesset, he basically referred to Barack Obama as being an appeaser because he supposedly wanted to talk to the terrorists. And that's what Joy Behar is mentioning. That's the context of that clip I played earlier from The View, where, of course, Joy Behar says, "You have a lot of balls to go to Israel and talk about appeasement and Hitler when your family built its fortune from the Nazis." And, of course, the fantastic Larissa Alexandrovna, editor of Raw Story, she has her own blog at largely.com. She, of course, rightly noted all the president's Nazis, real and imagined, an open letter to Bush. There's also a good article from Jerry Mazza, Israel's 60 Years of Nuclear Proliferation. And there's all kinds of links in there, and you can go down the hole of Israel. You know what? I'll do it now. It's now no more appropriate time. Here's a little sidebar, and here's something you won't find on MediaMonarchy.com. But somewhat secretively, 2 days ago, APAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, had a little meet and greet here in Portland, but it was done under the name of the Oregon Community Dinner. Now, my little mole at the Oregon Dinner got me the itinerary list, and just a few important things to mention. It basically goes through, you know, when the catering and when all that stuff will happen, and the coat check and the bar and all that kind of, you know, by the book stuff. However, it's important to note that at 3 o'clock, the florist arrived to set up centerpieces, and also at 3 o'clock, tables and chairs set up in ballroom. And then at 3:45, there's a bomb sweep. Just speaks a little bit, of course, to the ingrained paranoia of the Zionist regime. And some of the people there were people like Diane Solomon, Marilyn Abend, Elliot Brandt, Marshall Spector, Stan Schulster, Mark Ginsburg. And it was also interesting to note, again, my mole mentioned that, of course, the governor of Oregon, Ted Kulongoski, was there, sitting dutifully in the audience. Now, they note, of course, that even at events that Kulongoski actually speaks at, he doesn't stick around and sit in the seats, so that should let you know that Kulongoski knows what's up, and you got to show proper fealty to Israel. And I'm not going to have time to get into all of it today, but of course, you know, you have Obama and McCain and Hillary all vying to be the one to protect Israel the most. You got Obama at a synagogue just a couple days ago, launching a Hebrew blog and all that kind of stuff. That's going to show up on the page here pretty soon. So there you go. There's right there in my hot little hands is the secretive APAC meeting in Oregon. And there were, of course, fortunately, a handful of protesters outside. God bless them. Somebody bless them. But if we hit up aviation news, TSA to install 200 more body scanners. As we went over in previous weeks, there are the new body scanners that, of course, take an image of your full naked body They started it out, you know, just at one airport. But now it's going to go to Philly and Washington Dulles and Reagan and Los Angeles and Denver and Vegas and, you know, all kinds of places. Related to that, in the UK, airport-style scanners now on UK streets. Teams of 15 officers will be deployed across the 10 boroughs in London that have recorded the most knife crime. Police admit the in-your-face policing, quote, in-your-face policing. And you can hit up a link to thelondondailynews.com and read about Police Fight Back Begins. And again, as we're doing it here, of course, they know how to do it right in the Orwellian UK. In-your-face policing is now unleashed. They're the cops. They're going to do it. And if you don't like it, you got pain compliance, tasers, and you will submit. There's an interesting video posted up. You know, I actually do have the clip with me. My man, Richard Andrew Grove of 8th Estate and 9/11 Synchronicity, who is one of the many people as I try and get my new Mac AV setup rolling, is definitely one of the people I want to do an interview on this show. And also my man, Jeff Schwartz, over at 8th Estate. So hopefully all these things are coming soon, so just be patient with me here on MediaMonarchy.com. However, Richard Grove posted up a little video, and it's up on YouTube, and it's on the 8th Estate channel. And it's called If I Was a Terrorist by Retired Navy Serviceman. So Grove writes, I received this in an email, and while I can't confirm the identity of the messenger, his message seems apropos to what's going on in America. So it seemed logical and reasonable to offer it to you in this context.
If I was a terrorist and I wanted to destroy the American way of life, I wouldn't use planes and bombs to kill folks. Hell's bells, that's too risky. You might get caught or killed or both. Real terrorists get results, and then they lay the blame where it can't be found. So here's what I would do if I was a terrorist. I would foreclose on millions of homes, you know, kick folks out of their houses. I would devalue the dollar so the price of everything would go up. I would outsource their jobs so they couldn't find work. I would move the factories to foreign countries, you know, all the good paying factory jobs. I would make education unaffordable. You know, terrorists don't like having educated people around. I would make health care difficult to get and let the insurance companies just get away with murder. I would listen to their telephone calls, monitor their emails, and use that information to really stick it to them. Then I would give myself a big old tax cut, sit back in luxury, and watch them fight over the crumbs. But you know what? We live in the United States of America. Thank you, Jesus. And the people that represent us would never, ever let them get away with that, would they? Would they?
So that's called If I Was a Terrorist, and it's an unidentified and supposed retired Navy serviceman. And you can watch that video. And, of course, he's just asking the musical question, when you take all into account of what's going on, who are the real terrorists? Wildly shifting gears, and this is something we did mention last week with Alex Ansari. UK releases secret X-Files. So from Danger Room, they're mentioning that the US and France are releasing a treasure trove of UFO documents, and the BBC covers it. And you can download all those files for free, but you only have 1 month. And so that's slipping away. And it's also related that, it's interesting, right around the same time, the other two stories came out saying, Vatican says it's okay to believe in aliens, and astronauts say there must be alien life. Now, I don't spend a whole lot of time or thought on aliens. I've never seen anything convincing. Not saying there's not, but I haven't seen it. However, will the guise of aliens or Jesus' rapture or something be used, and does it all tie in with something called Project Bluebeam and massive religio event psyop to come? Maybe in 2012, who knows? We, of course, have the massive deaths in Burma, tens of thousands of people killed in Burma, tens of thousands of people killed in China, hundreds of thousands dead and displaced. One sidebar mention is after the Burma death toll from the cyclone Nargis, GOP convention head quits over ties to Burma. The man picked by the John McCain campaign to run the 2008 Republican National Convention resigned a couple Saturdays ago after a report that his lobbying firm used to represent the military regime in Myanmar, or Burma. Doug Goodyear resigned as convention coordinator and issued a two-sentence statement. Today, I offered the convention my resignation so as not to become a distraction in this campaign. I continue to strongly support John McCain for president, and I wish him the best of luck in this campaign. And that's going to have to do it, my friends, for episode 76 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's May 23rd, 2008, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and revereradionetwork.com. I didn't do it last week, so I've got a big old bunch of creepy visitors to MediaMonarchy.com in the last couple weeks. If you don't know, I keep track through StatCounter.com of just some of the interesting hits at MediaMonarchy.com. Sometimes they're funny, sometimes they're scary, and so I keep a little running text file and read them to you at the end of each episode. So, we've had United States Postal Service Googled Oregon vote by mail. News Corporation, you know, Rupert Murdoch. Their place in Brooklyn, they Googled Peter Dale Scott. And, of course, they're going to learn about deep politics. The DOD Network Information Center at the Colorado Air Force Academy Googled MySpace Air Force poser. The DEA was on more than a few times. We also had, I believe, maybe, the first ever visit from the Central Intelligence Agency. Out of Fairfax, Virginia, the CIA visited MediaMonarchy.com after Googling Dusty Falgo, who we, of course, just mentioned at the top of the show, was indicted anew for hookers, adding on, of course, to all his bribery and chicanery with Duke Cunningham. We also had United Airlines hitting me up from BlacklistedNews.com. Maytag Corporation out of Newton, Iowa, hit me up from Parallel Normal, reading about L. Ron Hubbard. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services hit me up from SourceWatch.org. We had the National Institute of Nuclear Physics, the Navy Network Information Center. They Googled National Level Exercise, which, of course, was the FEMA drill that went on in Oregon and all around the country a few weeks ago. United Nations Logistics Base in Italy. We're reading about Banksy and how he tagged up the wall in Bethlehem. CBS Corporation. We're reading about Mika Brzezinski, of course, the daughter of Barack Obama's senior foreign policy advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski. She's a talking head on MSNBC. Boeing was reading about the burgeoning newborn DNA database. We had Sony Pictures Entertainment Google David Ray Griffin, 11:50 a.m., Los Angeles. The Rawlings Company out of Louisville were also reading about the newborn DNA database. The Baglatola Medical Sciences University in Tehran Googled leadership, media, psychiatry, PSYOP. Mattel Incorporated, we're reading about Japan supplying sex slaves for the U.S. during World War II. Georgia Southern University Googled disaster drill talking points. Johnson & Higgins, a subsidiary of Marsh & McLennan, of course, involved in 9/11 and some of the insurance schemes. And, of course, see 911synchronicity.com for more on that. They Googled Manson Ranch secret graves. And, of course, we went over that a few weeks ago, but they didn't find anything. So, no new Manson graves for you. The Department of Veteran Affairs Googled suicide risks, veterans, Capitol Hill, May. We also had Yale University, the Federal Reserve, Kellogg Brown & Root, Boeing, Immigration and Naturalization Service, the Postal Service, the Stuttgart.Army.Mil headquarters. We had the U.S. Senate Sergeant at Arms. We had the Navy Network Information Center at Quantico. And finally, we had the Providence Health System of Oregon. They Googled Wayne Madsen, D.C. Madam. And, of course, Wayne Madsen, investigative journalist, tied in with the murder of D.C. Madam once the D.C. Madam was suicided. And Wayne Madsen spoke out about it. He was, of course, roughed up at airports. But that's going to do it, my friends. I thank you for downloading the show. I get more and more downloads of the podcast each week, and it's all because of you, and I love you, and I thank you, and I'll keep doing it for you. So this is episode 76, May 23rd, 2008, of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James. I'm your host and webmaster, telling you, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.